All right, I think we're ready to begin. The text that we are doing today, and I think for the next 3 weeks, are from the Psalms, because as you know, this is for the Psalm that is assigned for the first Sunday after Easter. And as you know, in all three of the series, the Old Testament lessons are, in my opinion, inexplicably substituted by readings from Acts, I think, all the way up until Pentecost.
What's wrong with that?
Yeah. You know, I don't, they could have done it for the epistle or something, but we won't get into that today. Anyway, I think for the next 3 weeks we are going to be doing the Psalms. And the Psalm for the first Sunday after Easter is Psalm 100, which actually is a very fitting, I think, an appropriate text for this Sunday, and one that I think you will be able to work on and develop some themes for preaching if you so desire. This psalm is in what is called the fourth book of the Psalms, which extends from Psalms 90 to 106, and most commentators categorize it as a hymn. The hymn has and they put it in various subcategories under hymn, but a hymn basically has the form of an introduction which serves as a call to worship or a call to praise, and then a body which gives the reasons why Yahweh should be praised, and then the conclusion which is a renewed call to praise him. And I think you will kind of see that structure as we go through this psalm. So we begin with the first verse, Mizmor Letodah. Mizmor, I think the Septuagint normally translates that with psalmist. That's where we get the word psalm. So that's the word song, Mizmor. Letodah. Now, Todah, the meaning here, it can be a couple of things. Todah can mean a general song of praise. And really the word yada means praise, and it occurs in context where that's the meaning more often than thanksgiving, as it's more normally translated. Yada is used in some contexts to confess, like in Psalm 32 verse 5, David, either the hifil or the piel of yada, confesses his sin. It's also used in contexts more often to praise Yahweh for all of his deeds, and it occurs in contexts then where the psalmist then will exhort people to praise and then give all of these reasons why. But Todah can mean a song of praise, but it can also refer specifically to a praise offering. Leviticus chapter 7 gives the kind of directions for giving a todah as an offering. It falls under the category of peace offerings there in the book of Leviticus. And so whether here the psalm, the superscription is indicating that this is a song for a peace offering or a praise offering, in other words, a song that accompanies the sacrificing of that offering, or more in general, a song of praise, you know, in general to accompany in a worship service. Scholars give different answers to that, okay? So anyway, the setting, I think that you'll see as we go through the psalm, clearly takes place in a worship setting. And some suggest that it would be very appropriate for a processional hymn, as you will see. All right, so we continue then with verse 1, Mizmor Letodah, Hari'u La Yahweh Kol Ha'aretz. Hari'u is a hifil imperative from Ruah, which means to shout. Sometimes it's a shout of battle, sometimes it's a shout of joy, sometimes it's a shout of distress. Here, the most familiar translation is make a joyful noise here, okay? So here you have a hifil imperative, which means shout to Yahweh, all the earth. And then, ivdu et Yahweh be simcha, bo'u le panav birenana. Ivdu, another imperative from avad, to serve, all right? So serve Yahweh with simcha, with joy. To serve here is, of course, talking about worship, you know, the service in general, but also beyond that, I would think, service in all aspects of your life. So serve the Lord with joy. Come before him with a ringing cry, renana. All right, so you notice, I think, something that you can think about if you're making a sermon on this text, the response, I suppose, that the psalmist is calling for in God's people. And he's going to tell us why in a few minutes. But notice that the note that struck here is not a subdued note. You know, when the people came to worship, it was with a ringing cry and with shouts and with a spirit of joy, so that the response is, you know, the attitude, I suppose, that is prevalent here is one of joyful eagerness and anticipation. Okay, something to keep in mind as we go through this psalm. Verse 3 then, De'u ki Yahweh hu Elohim, hu asanu velo anachnu. De'u is from yada, another imperative, okay? Know ki Yahweh hu Elohim, that Yahweh, he God, all right? Now notice that construction, that Yahweh hu Elohim, it is a what they call a tripartite nominative clause. In other words, you will notice that there are no verbs in there. The who gives is put in there and gives some prominence to the word that precedes it. So King James, for example, translates, know that Yahweh, he is God. All right. Another way to translate it is like this. Know that it is Yahweh who is God. It is interesting that this phrase, same phrase, occurs in Deuteronomy 4. In a couple of verses. And it follows as Moses is detailing God's great act of redemption in the Exodus. And so in that chapter, Moses says that God performed all these great signs and miracles and finally led the people out of Egypt so that they might know that it is Yahweh who is God. Okay? It also occurs in 1 Kings 18 when Elijah's offering that sacrifice, or he puts the sacrifice on the altar and pours water on it, remember? And then fire from heaven comes down and destroys the offering. And the people cry out, they cry out this exact phrase twice, Yahweh hu Elohim, Yahweh hu Elohim. It is Yahweh who is our God. So that there was a recognition there in that act that who they were dealing with. And so I'm wondering, you know, if in the repetition of this phrase, it is Yahweh who is our God, again, the people would think of the great acts of redemption that Yahweh had performed for them in the past in saying that phrase. But anyway, look at how the kola then advance one after the other. So first it says Yahweh is our God. Now then it deals with the fact that he is the creator. Hu asanu. He has made us. Again, that's simply a call perfect from asa plus first common plural suffix. He has made us. Now notice what the text has. Velo anachnu. Literally that's translated and not we ourselves. I think King James translates it like that. But if you will notice in the apparatus, it is suggested that the reading is lo, namely the preposition with a third masculine singular suffix, lo, to him. And that is, if you look at the Masoretic note at the side, you will see that that's the kare. That's what you are supposed to read when you come to that word. The Masoretes, I think, found 15 places in which you should read the lo as a preposition to him rather than lo as a negative not. And you can see how, in this particular phrase, the aleph could be attached very easily because of the following anachnu there. So if you, I think most modern translations will translate it like this. We are to him, or we are his. We belong to him. All right? So that what he's saying, what the psalmist is saying there, he made us, and so we belong to him. In other words, we're his by virtue of creation. But then he moves on with the next word, Amo, his people. And notice there's a little rabia the Masoretes put above the mem there as a pause. His people, pause. So that I think now the psalmist is again reminding the people of the covenant relationship that Yahweh has with them. He is their God, they are his people. Amo. So it goes, not only are people his because he created them, but now he's reminding the people of the special relationship that they have with him. Okay? His people, Vetzon Mar Ito, and the sheep of his pasture ridge. Okay? That Mar Ito can mean pasturage, but it can also mean pastoring or shepherding. And so some commentators suggest that you can translate this as the sheep that he shepherds. Okay? And again, you can see how the thought has advanced a little. His people, and not only that, but also the sheep that he takes care of. And so the thought is that God didn't only create, all right, but he's the one who also continues to care for his people. He is the good shepherd. And, you know, that theme, that metaphor of God's people as a flock is rather common in the Psalms, most notably Psalm 23, for example. And, of course, the New Testament picks it up and fleshes it out and develops it in quite nice detail in referring it to Christ. So, his people and the sheep that he pastures, or the sheep that he shepherds. Okay, that really, verse 3 is the body of the hymn, so that you notice it gives the reasons why the people should praise Yahweh. And now the verse 4 kind of takes up that theme again. Bo'u sha'arav betoda chatzerotav betehila hodu lo baraku shemo. So bo'u, again an imperative from bo, come or enter, She'arav, his gates, betoda, with thanksgiving, praise. Chatzerotav, his courtyards, from chatzer, his courtyards, bit hila, with, again, praise. Hodu, again, this is a hifil from yada, another imperative, all right? So praise him, barku, pl from barak, another imperative. Bless Shemo, his name. So that notice that the thought here again is that the gates to the temple are open. All right. From our perspective, they're open to a new and living way. You know, in Isaiah 60, I think, at the end of the chapter, picks that theme up and talks about the fact that the gates of the city, you know, are open for people to come in. Even the Gentiles can come in. And so the courtyards, not only the outer court, but it has courtyards plural, and I'm wondering if the implication is that, you know, to the inner courts as well. I think that that phrase also, you know, parallels colon verse 2, come before him or into his presence with a ringing cry, you see. And I think the book of Revelation picks that up as well in talking about the gates of the New Jerusalem open for people to come in, okay? So again, there's that idea that access there is to Yahweh, of course, purely because of his grace and what he has done for the people, because they are his people. So verse 5 continues that, why praise him, kind of takes that theme up again. Ki tov Yahweh le'olam chasdo. And notice that the tov is put forward to give a little prominence to it again. Ki tov, because good is Yahweh, le'olam chasdo, forever is his loyalty. Again, loyalty to his covenant and therefore loyalty to his people. He will not let them down. He will not break his promise to them. Ve'ad dor vador. Again, in Hebrew, very often, when you put nouns together, you can take those in a distributive sense, all generations. So, unto all generations, ve'ad dor vador, emunato, is his faithfulness. And again, especially the first part of that phrase is also very common in the Psalms as a description of Yahweh and what he has done. I think that the theme here, if you wanted to develop a sermon, one thing you could pick up, since it is the Sunday after Easter. You know, if you've all been to church the Sunday after Easter, a lot of pastors take vacations the Sunday after Easter, because Easter, of course, you have what this psalm describes perfectly, this joyous noise that people make and come to Yahweh. And then the week after, it's like dead. Where's all the noise? Where's all the joy? Where's all the response? And so I think that this psalm is a good one to keep the people in mind of the great thing that Yahweh has done for them. And, you know, again, talking about the psalm is set up nicely because it gives response reason, okay? So that you have the gospel in verses 3 and 5 especially, talking about the great things that God has done for us. Now, what should our response be to that? The psalm makes it quite clear, the note of joy and the motivation for service is not one of dreary duty or dread or threat, but a joyful anxiousness and willingness to come to the Lord to serve him, again, on the ground of all that he has done for us. Okay? That's all I have. Thank you very much.